And we conclude our show today in Florida at Mar-a-Lago, President Trump's private club in Palm Beach, a place that the president has frequently promoted throughout his presidency.
Thank you very much. It's been a great honor to have the Prime Minister of Japan and his extraordinary wife with us tonight at Mar-a-Lago. Many of the world's great leaders request to come to Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach.
Just a special place, and somehow it makes people feel good, and that's good for our relationship.
Like many presidents before him, Donald Trump has made use of a private residence to get out of D.C. Harry Truman had a getaway in the Florida Keys. Ronald Reagan had his ranch in Santa Barbara. But unlike his predecessors, Donald Trump's retreat also happens to be a business, one with nearly 500 paying customers. And last week, a woman who was not a member misled Secret Service agents in order to gain access to Mar-a-Lago. She was carrying a number of electronic devices, including a thumb drive that contained malware. On Wednesday, the president tried to downplay the incident.
No, I'm not concerned at all. We have very good control. We have extremely good, and it's getting better. And cyber, frankly, what we're doing with cyber is a story in itself. No, I think that was just a fluke situation. And I think that the person sitting at the front desk did a very good job.
The incident has raised serious security questions about Mar-a-Lago and highlights Trump's unique hybrid role as businessman and leader of the free world. Joining me now to help us understand all this is David Farenthold, Washington Post reporter covering President Trump's businesses and conflicts of interest. Thanks for being with us, David. If anybody knows about this, you do.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So let's start with the news, the latest news on this breach. What do we know about the woman who tried to enter Mar-a-Lago?
Well, she says she is a businesswoman from Shanghai, and she said that she had flown from Shanghai to Florida to attend an event that night at Mar-a-Lago. And indeed, there was an event that night at Mar-a-Lago for which a bunch of tickets, I think, had been sold in China. So that part of her story is plausible. It doesn't mean that it's true, but at least she was referring to an event that seemed to exist. But the reason she was regarded as suspicious was that she gave several different stories. She said she wanted to go to the beach club. Then she sort of intimated that she might be the daughter of a member of Mar-a-Lago. And then finally, only after she was sort of caught, did she talk about this event.
You have most likely been to the White House for reporting events. I've been there. There is a lot of security we have to go through in order to get near that facility. What is the difference here with Mar-a-Lago? I mean, are there security protocols that failed?
What you have to remember here is something you alluded to in the introduction. This is an incredibly difficult environment for the Secret Service to police because there's so many people coming in and out of it every day. In addition to the 500 members and their guests, there's also, on some days, hundreds of more people who are complete strangers who are coming to charity luncheons or galas at the club. But because there are so many people there, you just multiply the opportunities for there to be a mistake. You know, somebody who's left off the list who feels a right to be there because they've paid their dues or paid for their ticket. And so what they've created is a system of exceptions. Yes, there's a list and you got to be on the list. But if you're not on the list, you can get in anyway if you talk to Mar-a-Lago security and they know you or they think there's a reason you might be there. And it's that system of exceptions that allowed this woman in. She wasn't on the list. But she said, well, my name is Zhang. And they said, well, this is Zhang, who's a member here. So maybe, are you his relative? And she sort of nodded uncommittally. And then they let her in. So by creating this culture of lists, but also exceptions, that's where the mistakes could be made. And certainly where it was made in this case.
And is the Secret Service responding?
The Secret Service says, look, our job is to protect the president physically. You know, nobody can get within arm's length of the president without us stopping them. So we even within Mar-a-Lago, we protect him, we protect a smaller sphere around him. But the question of who gets into Mar-a-Lago, yes, we help with that, but that's ultimately the decision of the club and not us. So they said, look, you know, in this case, if there was a mistake, it was made by the club.
Have there been any other security breaches or close calls at Mar-a-Lago that we know of?
We know of a few instances. The New York Times reported on a couple of them. One person got in and like smeared bananas all over the place. And another person got in and changed all the screensavers on the Mar-a-Lago computers. This is funny, but it's a bit worrisome that they were able to get access to the Mar-a-Lago computer system. Broke in, changed all the screensavers to read expletive Trump.
I had not heard about that last one. How is Mar-a-Lago different? We mentioned at the top that presidents have often used residences outside of the White House to get away from D.C. What makes Mar-a-Lago different? Is it that it has this mix of sort of paying customers, if you will, and is not a private residence per se?
That's right. I mean, presidential retreats in general were private residences, but with an emphasis on private. Think about George Bush's trips to the ranch in Crawford, Texas. These were isolated places on purpose. They wanted to go someplace where they were kind of alone. And so for the Secret Service to protect those places, it was, you know, some staff, some media, some family and friends. A few people were allowed in and out of this secluded place. Mar-a-Lago is the opposite of that in every way you can think of. It's extremely busy. And that's on purpose. Trump, to make money off of it, needs it to be busy. There need to be people coming in and out every day.
And I'm also wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the actual security threat that this woman may have posed, either to not just the president, but to potentially to the country?
I think the two separate questions. The question of her physical threat to the president, it doesn't seem like there was any sort of plot by her to harm him. And as we said, there's a number of layers of security around him beyond the one that she got past. The question of, could she have been a spy? Could she have sort of installed surveillance devices? Could she have overheard conversations? Could she have watched the routines of the president and his aides? Yes, of course. Anybody who gets past the reception desk at Mar-a-Lago, which is where she was stopped, could observe all that. We don't know if that was her intention, though. A lot's been made of this malware on her thumb drive. A lot of us could be carrying around viruses and malware on thumb drives we don't know about. Just the fact that there's malware doesn't mean that she was a spy sent to plug that into the Mar-a-Lago computer system and control everything.
Another twist in this is that last month we found out about Cindy Yang, who was the massage parlor owner who was selling Chinese citizens tours to Mar-a-Lago that may or may not have guaranteed access to the president. What does that tell us about Mar-a-Lago and its sort of ongoing, you know, relationship with folks from the outside and within the presidential circle as well?
It tells us two things. One, Mar-a-Lago does not seem to be doing much of anything to control who has access to Mar-a-Lago other than taking their money. The other thing about Mar-a-Lago is it shows you how much the place has changed because of President Trump, because he drove away so many of their old customers. You know, President Trump took office, the galas and banquets and luncheons that Mar-a-Lago had in its ballrooms were sort of the old kind of stodgy pastel-colored Palm Beach events they'd had for years and years and years. But after Charlottesville in 2017, where President Trump said, as you recall, there's many fine people on both sides of those violent protests, including violent white supremacists. I think more than 20 of Mar-a-Lago's old, you know, reliable, stodgy Palm Beach customers left. And so it created this hole, which has been filled by kind of weirder events, more startup events that don't have the same customers that are mainly aimed at just super fans of Trump.
What dynamic does that do? Does that create, David? I mean, beyond the potential spy elements here, there seem to be bigger questions about how much the price tag is to access power directly with the president.
That's what's really interesting about this is that Trump doesn't come to all of these events. And if he does, he doesn't often shake a lot of hands, but he does sometimes. And so what people are able to do is to sell access to the president's club and, you know, possible access to the president to people who are just, you know, they could be from anywhere. As long as their money's green, they can get in. And so there's been events and some other galas that Cindy Yang exploited. Maybe other people have exploited too. Cindy Yang's one we know about, who saw this as a chance to just sell access to the president.
David Farenthold is a Washington Post reporter covering President Trump's businesses and conflicts of interest. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.